condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, we're based at the Giants. That's Tom Howie. Just met Willard aboard. And Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. We have S&P futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 50. Dow futures up 124. Continue to move on up here as that seems to be what we're heading to do. Same gets narrower and narrower, though, as Amazon has joined the fray now. It's up like 10% in the last week or so. So it's those stocks just kind of creeping up. Well, yesterday was pretty across the board. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, if we're going to keep moving on up, you've got to start playing the Jefferson's theme as part of the bumper music collection.
Well, you know, it's sort of interesting. If you were to ask, I think, any economist, if you were to say every single time there's any kind of a blip or any sort of a thing in the market or any kind of a disease or you name it what it is, you pour more money into it. There's an awful lot of people that really believe that if we just would have done that all the time, we never would have had a problem, a recession, a depression, or anything like that, and that this is absolutely the cure-all. And yet there are serious studies and serious history that says it is until you start pouring inflation. Every time you do it and you pump an asset up and you move the CPI number even a little bit, and it doesn't trickle down to anybody making a wage, or it doesn't help a saver, which it doesn't now, all you do is increase the distance between the top and the bottom every single time. And I'm not saying in the short run it's not a policy that is somebody would use or I would use, but this is no longer the short run. And it's up there, because I was looking yesterday at the money supply numbers again as they started to come down a little bit to more rational areas. All of a sudden last week they kicked right back up again. Whether it's because of the virus, whether it's because of God knows what, but maybe it was because of so much money the Chinese put in, it might not even be anything our guys did, because the money put in anywhere tends to increase stuff other places, because we got that.
Is it possible that the Fed is doing more chasing and less managing of this? Is it really overt, or does it just keep getting away from them and they keep trying to rein it back in?
Every time, if there's a thought of them reining it back in and the market correcting, because interest rates would move just even a little bit, bonds would go down, asset prices would go down. All of them would. I mean, even the price of baseball teams. If the idea, anybody who thinks that one of these teams, well, I'm not saying one of them, but probably a few of them that are, but that your general sport team is worth $1 billion. If interest rates were 5% or 6%, which somebody of that credit level would have to borrow at normally, I mean, do you really think that these guys are going to pay $60 million a year in VIG and still make money on these teams? I mean...
Well, of course.
Yeah.
No. Well, you know what? I've always contended this on the college football side, and I sort of imagine the same thing is true on the pro sports side. There is way more money in there than is ever reported.
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't know, there
is just so much off the book stuff or manageable stuff, and we'll see it with the Cubs and their new TV setup that. I'm assuming over the long haul it will probably be successful. It could prove to be a complete disaster, sort of like when the White Sox made an attempt at that. probably going to be more like the you know, what the Yankees have going, and it'll be successful, but none of that money is going to be attributed to the Cubs, even though the, even though it's all going to be because of the Cubs.
Well, I mean,
it's going to be off books for the you know, for the TV station.
Well, I mean, it's not off some books. I mean, it's if
not off some books, but it's off the books that that get a look.
If it's owned by the Cubs, it's going to be on the Cubs books. But if it's owned by, you know, Ricketts Inc. is totally separate from the Cubs. They can say it's owned by the Cubs, but it's not. Right, I mean, if it's owned,
correct.
By,
you know. Yeah, but all of its revenue will be directly attributable to the Cubs. That's easy for me to say.
Well, if you do it, if you did it properly, all right. I mean, if you did it properly, I mean, I'll just give you an example. When PTI sponsored Stocks in Jackson, we were on the radio, and hopefully soon we'll be again. I always kept things very separate. I mean, PTI paid for commercials on Stocks and Jacks because that's the way it should be. Now, if it's the Kevin O'Neill Network, they call it, you know, even in a doing business as the Cubs Network, the Cubs should pay that network whatever that network should pay the Cubs for the rights to show the thing.
Correct.
And they should get advertising. It should be separate. It could be under you know, Ricketts Inc. or whatever, but the last thing you want is like blend stuff like that. That isn't really blended.
Sure, but then when they start looking at revenues for, you know, as part of negotiating collective bargaining agreements and that kind of thing, that's what I mean by off book.
Except I think, Kevin, that
and if you look at revenues for the Cubs, the revenue for the Cubs is not going to be the profit from the television venture. The revenue for the Cubs is going to be what the television venture pays the Cubs.
I think it's,
you see,
yeah.
You see what I'm talking about? Yeah. That's where the difference is.
Well, it also comes down to if you beat up on a city to give you a chunk of the street for people to drink there and screw the bartenders or the bar owners.
I was going to say, yeah. You get to do that too?
Well, they want that street. They want that street outside the right field, Sheffield. They want that closed for like an hour or two after the game where they can put tables out there essentially. They haven't got it yet.
Sure, that's why they're buying up all the properties. So the property owners won't object because the property owners are them.
Well, that's why they're pissed off the alderman. He's reluctant to give it to him. The guy who gave him all the other stuff. Now they finally got the first no out of the guy, and now they want him out. So anyway, but I think Kevin, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to say that football, the NFL, is probably fairly straight to figure out how much they make. Because you've got the TV contracts, all right. You've got the home gate. You know the lease deal for most of these places. You know how much they make from NFL property. I'm guessing the local radio is listed. I'm going to say it's fairly straightforward to find out how much the football guys are making.
Yeah, I suspect it is. It's really the only thing that might be different is digital media for them. And I don't know where that falls.
There's probably some stuff. I mean, how much, you know, coaches make on the, you know, going on the score with somebody at night or something like that, or you know, if we had to, you know, the backfield coach every Monday morning or something and paid him $500 to come at him, that stuff. So, I think that goes to the person, though, doesn't it, Manny? Not the team, I think.
Correct.
Yes.
I'm going to say that we could probably find. Now, what you're not going to get is you're not going to get, and I've heard rumors of this effect, which, of course, I'll spread a rumor, that at one point, like, you know, seven or eight of the Hallis kids are all on the payroll doing God knows what, you know, polishing footballs at $100,000 a year or something. I don't know that, but I've heard that a lot of them were on the, quote, payroll. I don't know if they do anything or not. So, but that kind of stuff, you know, can you hide $1 million here and there doing that, given family members, you know, jobs they don't do anything for. Yeah,
but is it effectively a stock dividend?
Well, but is it also is it you know, so let's say, I'm going to say the Bears make $75 million. If they didn't pay the family members, they'd make 80. You know, and they're pushing $5 million out as expense or something. You know, there's some in there, but it's not like it's $100 million they're passing out to the grandkids. I don't think. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but if you look
But if they were to do that, if they were to inflate what they pay them, that's why I said it's effectively a stock dividend.
Right.
It's something you get for being an owner. In this case, the what you get is a job, but it's not, you know, it's not really much of a job.
Well,
you know, I'm not saying that's the case because I don't know with the Bears.
It's a big enough paycheck. It feels like a job. I'll do it. $100,000 a year for nothing or whatever it is. Anyway, but I mean, I think football is fairly transparent. Baseball, yeah, we start getting Lackey's cable deals and I don't know, somehow or another in baseball though, there's got to be an even upper, if that's a term, because when we were going over last week, I don't know if you were on, Kevin, the value of all of the baseball teams, I think I sent that out to everybody, they don't go below $1 billion. So even your crummiest teams, which would be Tampa Bay and Kansas City, they're still way up from where they were 10 years ago. So something has happened in the last decade to where at the beginning of the decade, the crummy teams were worth, you know, $400 million. Now they're all worth $1 billion, according to this article. The Yankees are worth $5 million, and the Cubs are worth $3 something. But or actually, the next one would be the Boston Red Sox. Then I think it was Cardinals and the Cubs are next or something. But somewhere in there, you know, you start figuring the stadium deals and all the other stuff. But the bottom line is nobody drops below, even the Sox are supposedly worth $1 billion. So there must be some enough revenue share now where no matter who you are, you're not the poor kid on the block anymore. You know, Matty probably knows more about that than me. What's changed in the last 10 years, Matt? Is it the revenue share?
I think that's a huge part of it, yeah. I think that's the biggest change, which makes it even more curious why so many teams cry poor.
I don't know what they do anymore. Not near as much as they used to. Well, they're going to do that just...
Still a ton of teams that won't spend money.
Well, but rich people are going to cry poor no matter what.
Well, that's a good point.
You know, it's just the way the world is. But
there's still a huge spread between the top 10 teams and the bottom 10 teams as far as what they spend on salary.
That part's true,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, if... But I guess if you're worth five times more, $5 billion to $1 billion, then you may spend five times more.
There's no question that the cash in for the Yankees and the Dodgers is more than the cash in for the White Sox.
Right.
When you start hitting the luxury tax, everybody's still looking for a profitable, you know, year over year profits.
And to be blunt, I'd feel the same way.
When the Ricketts came on,
I don't begrudge them that. No, they have a right to make the money.
Yeah, when the Ricketts came on,
and fans, if we don't like it, we don't spend. I mean, that's supposed to be the way markets work, unfortunately they get monopolies as part of the deal for the most part. A handful of cities have two teams, but for the most part they get monopolies. And with the monopolies, it's either no baseball or take what you get.
I was just saying when the Ricketts came on and did their interviews over the Cubs convention last month, they didn't do their family panel like they've done the last several years because they didn't want tomatoes thrown at them, I guess. But they basically said, you know, paying that luxury tax sucks. Like, yes, people are mad at us that we haven't signed big free agents this year like we have every year in the past 5 years, but... We're up against that luxury tax. We spend more than everyone in baseball except for, I think, the Yankees and Red Sox. And, we're not gonna pay this big tax and cut into our profitability. And he has the right to do that. I mean, it sucks as a fan because I don't think this roster is very good, but, I mean, it makes sense.
Well, my style would be, if I owned one of these places, I would be more of the Texas Rangers style where I had a real lot of guys in the mid-range and tried to have a real balanced sort of team. Now, granted, you have to have your good pitcher and the other kind of stuff, but the thought of me having this top-down thing where the White Sox had when they won, where your top five guys make like 90% of the money and everybody else is minimum wage, I want no part of that.
No, you can't do that. I mean, everyone that's won it all in the last 10 years has done it with guys in their essentially rookie contracts. Their first 5 or 6 years. That's how you have to win now. I mean, unless you're the Yankees, but even the Red Sox just traded away their best player because they didn't want to pay him $250 million. And the Cubs are talking about doing that with Bryant. You need to draft really well, and you need to have 5 or 6 guys that are in their mid-20s that aren't yet making a ton of money that are your best players. And you try to lock a couple of them up with team-friendly deals like the White Sox just did with Eloy Jimenez, like the Cubs did with Rizzo. And if you can do that, great. But the players with smart agents like Chris Bryant turn that down, and Bryce Harper turn that down because they know they can get way more money if they wait. But that's what you have to do. So yeah, to your point, I mean, that's what you want. You don't want all of your money, like the Blackhawks and a lot of hockey teams get stuck with, going to two or three guys, and then you got a bunch of bums the rest of the roster.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's not. It's not only not, but enough teams should realize that it's not working. But economically, when this first started, I mean, I'm going to say early '80s, there was a guy on the trading floor. Actually, I learned most of my options from a gentleman named Marty O'Connell. Brilliant man, Notre Dame. He's probably 5 years older than us, Kevin. Maybe more. He's the same age as your arch-villain buddy, Dick Belden. So they were roommates.
Arch-villain buddy, huh? Okay.
He's the Kevin O'Neill of the dark side. Knows all about the Notre Dame football and basketball and everything. And by the way, he claims we have one extra guy. We have 86 people now signed. That's why we can only sign 16 freshmen and not 25 like Georgia. So even though the Irish this year, and if you read any of these columns, were considered not even in the top 20 in terms of recruiting, but if you looked at the quality, it's as good as anybody's. It's just we have 16 people. Notre Dame has 16 people, and Clemson, Georgia, Alabama are all like 22, 23, 25. So it has to do with numbers, not with quality, allegedly. Because evidently we don't have people leaving like they do. Well, of course, theirs are all drafted.
Yeah, I'd have to pay closer attention to it. You know what? I start paying attention when they get on the field.
I went through who the people the Irish got, and I'm going, how could this be 21? They got like a 5-star, about four stars, and a bunch of 3-stars. It looks pretty good to me. But then you look and see, George is 25. So there's 9 extra guys that you can screw up with, right? Anyway, what I'm saying is when this first arbitration thing came out, Marty says, do you believe how stupid these owners are? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, it's not about free agency. It's about this arbitration. The idea that you put, if everybody was a free agent, anybody who's ever had an economics class would know that the prices go down. I mean, I'm not talking about compared to the old slavery clause where you signed to the Yankees, you were there for life. I'm talking about rather than this kind of free agency. Because if everybody was a free agent, the price would be down. He says, now what you do is you take a few people that are difference makers and you wing them into the mix. And those can be auctioned off just like a prize bull, basically. And he says, so the price of those people is going to be higher because there isn't somebody else you can go get. But, which is all right. Because it's stupid, but it's all right. But then if you have this arbitration piece where you walk in and say, wait a minute, Matty Weber just got $30 million and he's a left fielder hitting 310 and I'm hitting 305, that means I'm worth, you know, 25 million or 26. Well, that's the dumbest thing. Because now everybody moves their way up. Which is insane.
Yeah, because arbitration is based on what else is going on in the market.
Right.
So as long as you have scarcity of free agents that bid up the price, then you go to arbitration and say, and the relative value of that guy compared to the free agents is higher. And as Jerry Reinsdorf used to say, that means I am required to match whatever my dumbest competitor does.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, if I was in that game, I would absolutely never even entertain letting a Chris Bryant go 5 years and then all of a sudden everybody can sign him for some price that's worth 10 times more than I was paying the year before. I'd get a real thing like they did with Rizzo, find a real sale, and if he didn't want it, I just let him go. I would never once bid for one of those people. You would never have me locking my... I'd pony up $30 million for a year if I thought that was the going rate, but you're not about to get me to do some guy who's 35 and give him a 6-year contract at $30 million when 3 years from now the virus could shut down baseball and I still own this bleep $30 million.
That's what a lot of teams are doing. And they're paying them, you know, the escalated 1 year at a time until they get to that fifth or sixth year. And then they're either letting them walk like the Nationals did with Harper, or they're trying to trade them like the Red Sox did with Betts and like the Cubs are talking about doing with Bryant and getting as much as they can for him for the last year or two.
Yeah, and I don't think you'd be pissed off at a team for doing that. I mean, the numbers are just not there.
Yeah.
The Cubs won their arbitration with Bryant, didn't they?
They won the
dispute.
Their grievance case, yes.
Which I think they should have, by the way.
Yep.
Which I think they should.
So, and that's, you know, that's part of the Cubs' problem with signing Bryant too. Is you know, they're going to free agency because they're PO'd about that. and they're going to extract every ounce they can, and it may not be out of the Cubs, but it's starting to look like that made him a more valuable trade commodity, because whoever acquires him gets 2 years. So I haven't looked at the rumor mill. You know, I haven't looked at MLB trade rumors lately, but I'm assuming that there's going to be some at least serious discussion now.
Well, the Cubs aren't the only one. The only ones that don't want his agent. Who's his agent? Boris?
Yeah.
Boris.
He's not the only one that doesn't want that guy around.
Right. Well, but now, if you're going to trade, you know, if you're going to deal some kind of young asset for him, you do, if you make the deal, you get him for 2 years now.
Bryant.
Not one. You get him for two.
That's right, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Which is why the Cubs.
So now you know, he has value, whereas as a 1 year guy, he would have had substantially less value. So if you get a team that needs to get over the top, the Braves lost their third baseman, for example. Did they not?
Correct. The Braves are considered one of the top three teams in the Bryant sweepstakes.
Yeah, because they're a contender, and they lost their third baseman. And they don't have a good replacement.
And they have young assets that they can trade.
And they have assets they can trade, correct. So, that's baseball today. That's how it's managed. And in the Cubs' case, that's a short-term hit, but it could be parlayed into better days in the very near term.
Well, he has to go to a place where, even though I don't think he's as good as he was 3 years ago, if he hits 300... that he's 30 batting points higher than the guy you've got in there, and not just 10. Because if the other guy is pretty decent, last thing you want to do is pay this guy $30 million and the other guy's making $5 million. SP futures down up 13, Dow futures up 126. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures up 1250. NASDAQ futures up 45.25. We got Jay Powell back on the Hill today. says the coronavirus might impact world economy. I think that's probably true. Hopefully, not too much, but, seems like it's, I don't know if it's just gonna become an old news or what. The numbers are growing, but maybe not as fast as they were, geometrically, or they were a couple weeks ago, so maybe that's good news. Individual stocks: Apple's up $1.30, 3M up $1.30, Microsoft up $1.46. Microsoft took a big turn yesterday in the middle of the day. It was up over $3 and was down $5 at one time, which it hasn't done in a while. Finished down, but now it's up again today. So Dow up 122 over in let's see, where are we going? Are we going with over in Europe? We've got DAX up 110.8%, FTSE up 30.4, CAC around up 26.4. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 175.4%, Shanghai up 25.8%, Hang Seng up 239.8%. So if you look at those numbers, maybe you're thinking the China government, didn't they say yesterday, Maddie, back to work or something? So whatever it is, they're starting to go the other way on this virus, even though it seems to be growing still a little bit. Bonds 10-year 1.62, so that rate is up. 1 minus 0.37, that's up a little bit. In Japan, minus 0.04, so that's going towards zero again, a little more than it was. Oil up 78 cents, 50.72. It's still between 50 and 51 every day, even though it's up and down every day. Brent up $1.14, 55.15. Natural gas, 182, back up over 180. RBOB, 155. We got gold, 15.69. Still hanging in there. It's, like I said, David said it's either going to go one way or the other here because it's been forming this plateau, doing something. Now whether it goes up or down, I guess we'll see. Copper actually up 2 cents, 2.60. It's the first time we've seen copper up in a while. Matty, we're up for his traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues out on I-355 in the western suburbs. On northbound at Finley Road, there is a disabled vehicle blocking the right lane on the northbound side of I-355, so keep that in mind. And then just north of there, Army Trail Road, eastbound at I-355, there is a crash that's affecting I-355 as well. So keep that in mind, couple of issues out in the western burbs on I-355. Coming in on the Edens and Kennedy, looking great so far this morning. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford, looking good too. Same for Lakeshore Drive in all directions. And off the expressways, only one crash to report, and that's Route 83 at Elmhurst Road. There is an accident. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today will be cloudy and cool, but not terrible. A high of 37, and then temperatures start to drop this evening, and then the snow moves in. We're expected to get 3 to 6 inches of snow beginning tonight and going into tomorrow morning, and then the temperatures will drop. Tomorrow will be in the low to mid 20s for a high. And then the snow will taper off, and then Friday will just be in the teens for a high. We'll have some sunshine. So the next couple of days, not ideal, but then this weekend we return back to the 30s, and hopefully we'll melt away that snow from tonight. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 64. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, not a good night for any of our teams. The Bulls were blown out at Washington, 126-114. Blackhawks had two different leads in Edmonton and fell to the Oilers 5-3 as the Blackhawks blew both leads. Coyotes lost in Toronto to the Maple Leafs 3-2. In a couple of really good games in college hoops last night, Illinois was down as many as 23 at home to Michigan State, stormed back and took the lead late, and then Michigan State got a tip dunk with about 5 seconds left to go up 70-69. Illinois drove down for a last second attempt, and Ayo, how do I pronounce his last name? Dosunu, Illinois' best player, his feet gave out. I don't know if you saw this, Chief, and his foot got sort of caught underneath him, and it twisted his knee, and it looked really bad. And I don't know if he tore an ACL or what. Hopefully not. We'll learn more about that today. But the ball ends up bouncing away. Michigan State hangs on to beat Illinois 70-69, and Illinois' best player goes down with what looked like a serious injury in the final seconds.
It didn't get worse than that.
No. And then Notre Dame gave a valiant effort at Virginia last night, falling to the Cavaliers by 1 point, 50-49. Chief.
They had no real answer for that 7 foot guy, would you say, Kevin?
Oh, for Diakite, he's a good ball player, but they had answers. They had open shots and just didn't make any shots.
Well, yeah, that's their. But I'm talking about who's that big, the big white guy in Virginia, 7'1".
Oh, he didn't. He was okay, but he didn't do that much.
A couple times I saw him, they couldn't handle him inside. Then he made a three that really seemed to confuse him, which would.
Yeah, I'll pull up the points, but I don't even think he got the double digits.
Yeah, Virginia, I mean, obviously that's the tempo and style they want to play, that low-scoring game, but it's hard to win on the road scoring 49.
Yeah, well, but they've
got 11. And if you look, and you go look, man, some guys had uncharacteristically bad nights. They're not a great shooting team anyway, but in a couple of cases, T.J. Gibbs is an example who's been terrific through the conference season. Just had nothing last night. He made a big three late in regulation, but that may be the only shot he made.
Yeah, that's the one I saw.
It was a shame because that was a big opportunity for them to get themselves, kind of in bubble position, and that's not the way it's going to be. So too bad. Here I got the box score for I think it was Huff.
How did Austin Carr used to score a point a minute before a 3-point line, and these guys can't score 50 as a team?
Well, let me see. I will tell you exactly as soon as ESPN loads its page here, because Stat Broadcast won't get me the Virginia scores.
I hate it when that happens.
Huff had 8 points. They had an answer for him. It was really Diakite getting 20. Their center, and he was 7 out of 15. But if you look at, Virginia's team shooting, 19 out of 51. Their three-point shooting was 5 out of 20. Notre Dame was 20 out of 61. Three-point shooting, 6 out of 26. I mean, you're not going to score points if you can't put the ball in the basket, and it wasn't like they didn't have open shots. Gibbs was 2 out of 11. Mooney had his usual double-double, but it was 11 points and 14 rebounds, but he was 4 out of 14. When you're a big man, you can't be 4 out of 14. He took 5 three-pointers, was 0 for on the three-pointers.
I'm going to say that I'm going to be old and grumpy here. I'm going to say that if you're shooting 5 for 26 on a three-point line, you better tell your people to stop shooting a three-pointer and let's get a mid-range game together, because that's not working and it's horrible to watch.
Well, it is, and so what's the more appalling part, the 5 or the 26?
The 26.
Yeah, but the part of the problem is that Virginia is so good defensively that they just do force you away from the basket. What they were doing, because Mooney's primarily an inside scorer for Notre Dame, and he's their most reliable scorer, is they were pushing him out. Making him get the ball far enough away from the basket, and as soon as he touched it, they ran a double team to him. Even if he was 15 feet from the basket, they still doubled him there, and forced them to pass out of it. And you know, nobody else was getting to the basket. You know, Durham was okay; it was 3 out of 4, but Durham gets pushed around easily because he's so skinny.
If you were to look at the, and I'm not going to go Bobby Knight and everybody here, but if you were to look at the way people set up coming down the floor, there's one guy sort of in the middle, and there's four people on the 3-point line. So it's virtually impossible to set up any kind of a screen on the block or any kind of a mid-range screen. If you watch some of the, all you got to do is go to YouTube and see Michael Jordan's 63-point game, and you'll see some, you know, Jordan-esque incredible stuff, which you should see anyway once in a while because it's so spectacular. But I'm going to say 40 of those points were the center, maybe the power forward, somebody making moves across the lane, somebody coming from the other side, cutting across, somebody getting caught in the screen, somebody getting the ball open and shooting the ball right away from a spot where they all look to get him the ball at. You see none of that in today's basketball. There's first four people throwing the ball out on the outside. Maybe he'll drive in, maybe back out, but they really all want to take the three. And you don't see.
I think you're right, and I know for a fact that the Notre Dame coaches have been trying to get Gibbs is driving more, and the unfortunate part of that was he got a lot of shots at the basket. He was 2 out of 4 on 3-pointers. He was 2 out of 11 overall. So what does that tell you?
Yeah.
On 2-point shots, he was 0 for 7, and a lot of those were, you know, within 5 feet of the basket. It was just a really rough night for a guy who's been playing really well. And you could see the frustration after some of the misses. It was like, you know, from his body language, he was just so PO'd about it.
That's Virginia's game.
But they're trying to get Hub to drive more, and you know, if a guy's not inclined to do it, you really have to lean on him. It takes a while to break a bad habit or to establish a new habit. And, you know, a lot of times they'll get it in practice a long time before they get it in games. And I know they're pushing him to get to the lane more, but so far it's not happening.
He's their
ball handler. When your ball handler gets into the lane and he can either score or dish it off, you know, if he draws the defense, and then you pass out to the outside and get an open three. That's catch and shoot is much better than dribbling around and trying to jack one up at the end of the shot clock.
Because I'm not sort of talking about the driving part, but whatever possessed me. I used to go to Diggers practices all the time. And maybe not when I was a senior, but when I was a junior, I went a lot. And they were playing Ohio State. Ohio State had this guy, Hornacek, was that his name? He was there.
No, Hornacek wasn't Ohio State.
Began with an H. Anyway, he was their white guy scorer. You know, he was 6'6". He could shoot the ball real well. So Digger was going through the routines with the schlump five that don't start. He was walking them through the series of picks that Ohio State would use to get him open right where he wanted it at like the 13, 14 foot mark, 15 foot mark. It was amazingly it was a series of 3 and 4 picks and movement of all their other guys just to get this guy open where he wanted it. And virtually all teams did something like that with their, quote, scorer. Even, and the Bulls did that with Michael Jordan, for God's sake. I don't see any of that.
You do have to remember, though, in those Digger Phelps days that you're discussing, they didn't have a 3-point shot.
I understand that. But I'm saying, but this whole
and even when they did, even when they put it in later in Phelps's career, he never embraced it. So he discouraged them from taking 3-point shots, which was, you know, statistically. I mean, there's a lot of statistics behind it, but you know, the statistics only work if you put the ball in the basket.
What I'm saying here, Kevin, is that when you there's a progression to this. I understand the 3-point shot changed basketball. And I also know that Digger never caught up to it. I mean, I get that part. But there was a whole choreography of 5 people to get somebody open someplace. Right? What I'm saying is you look at these people now, pro is just as bad. It looks to me like there's no choreography at all. The first guy.
Yeah, but if you watch the good teams, and if you know where I sit in the arena, I have a really good view of what's going on for the whole team in the, on the floor. There's a lot more than you think. It always looks bad, Tom, when you can't shoot. It doesn't matter what you do. If you can't shoot, the basketball is going to look lousy.
What I'm saying, Kevin, is that if you watch any pro game, and if I know how to use film like Matty does, out of 10 times down the floor, 25 times down the floor, I will identify 10 of the 25 where it's just get down there, make three or four shots around the three-point line from one guy to the other. Nobody's open inside, and if somebody's got a foot and a half, he takes the shot, or even backing up. That, to me, is not basketball. Now, yes, there are times where people go in and there is some sort of a play, but I'm saying half the time, it's first guy over half court shoots a three. And that's just crap basketball.
I think that's an overstatement, but
I will
say this. In my world, there's two ways to succeed running a half-court offense. One of them is that you have guards who can get inside as a threat to score and will draw the defense and will either score or they will be able to pass, whether it's passing to across the lane to somebody for a layup or whether it is passing back out to the corner for an open shot. The other way is you feed the post and you go inside out.
Right.
Now, if you still take a lot of three-point shots, that's fine. But it's just like any other game with a goal. It's just like hockey. It's just like soccer.
Disagree.
If you don't get the ball in front of the goal, then you're not going to be successful unless you learn to do that consistently. And I think you and I would both agree.
I'm saying there's a lot of work to do to screw up the defense, be it picks, have somebody who can draw the double team, then he's looking for the open man. I have no problem with the open man being an inch behind the three-point line and shooting a three rather than 2 feet in front of it was almost the same shot. I get all that. I'm just saying the thing degrades to so many times there's just... I don't think Mooney needs to be standing out there winging in threes, to be honest with you.
I hate it when he's out there winging in threes, even on days when he makes 3 out of 6.
Well, first of all, when he's winging away from threes, that's even worse. Hey,
I want to buy the basket.
I stopped into the Tripoli Tap last night because I knew some of my friends would be in there, and I ran to my attorney buddies. And
when did you get friends?
I got acquaintances. They talked. They talked to me. And to say that they were outraged over these four prosecutors that quit yesterday because the sentencing thing got changed is an understatement, Kevin. Trump tweeted out that 7 to 9 years was too long for this guy, and then the Justice Department changed the sentence request, and the four guys who were involved in the case all quit.
I saw it. Didn't pay much attention to it.
I don't know. I don't know how all that works.
I was kind of more focused on the primaries yesterday.
Yeah, what do you make of those?
I think Biden's in big trouble.
Oh, I think him and Warren are...
No, Joe Biden is what this is like his third or his fourth bite at the apple, the fourth time he's run for president. He has yet to win a delegate.
I think him and Elizabeth Warren are both toast.
I think they are both in big trouble. There's a lot of punditry saying that Amy Klobuchar is surging, and she may be, but I think it's a little premature to say that because third place may be nice, but she was not anywhere near in striking distance of second place. And when you consider what crappy candidates 4 and 5 are, I'm not sure the third is a big prize. She may do well. She's starting to get a little bit of traction and a little bit of interest, but I think that's way premature. She may be just flavor of the day. And of course, Bloomberg took a big hit yesterday because he's not in the race, but I don't know if you heard the audio tapes released.
I did not.
His stop and frisk days. But there are some really, really bad quotes in there that he's going to have to live down.
Well, I mean, Manny Weber and I were talking about that on the way in. I don't... Anybody who thinks that, especially in Chicago now, when you're getting these roving gangs of people, and in, let's say, the good neighborhoods, the amount of shootings, the amount of robberies, the amount of stuff... You can't go on to CTA in some areas now. This is in broad daylight, Kevin. Anybody that doesn't think that society will figure out a way to protect itself, and if a few people get ruffled along the way, as much as I love being our society and everybody has rights and so forth, you know what? Other people have rights too, Kevin. I mean, I don't know. The fact is, the stop and frisk worked, and New York has been. And granted, some cops abused it, which of course never should happen. But I mean. the stuff that's going on here and CTA and things, our policemen right now either don't want to or can't or don't have the tools. We've got nothing but cameras all over the place. We've essentially off-roaded police work, the cameras. And you know what, Kevin? It's not working. And someplace, somewhere, this fiasco with the fire guy you heard the story the other day about the fire department guy who got shot? It was all over the news here. But you read this story. There's four, I don't know what you want to call them, allegedly, you know, human beings, process of our educational system. And they go to this guy's, these people's house. There's gangbangers evidently in the house, or not nice people in the house. To draw them out, they set a car on fire. So, of course, the fire department shows up to put the fire out. Isn't that what fire departments do? Well, the goofs in the house come out. And now this gunfight, which evidently was all preordained, starts. They're shooting like over the heads of the fire department. So one of the guys gets nailed with a stray bullet, gets hit in the leg. Not a good thing, but he's okay. Evidently, he's not going to have any permanent damage or anything. So that's the good news. The bad news, you got, Kevin, one of them's 31, 17, 15, 13. I mean, if you can't find a way in today's world to see 5, 13, and 15-year-olds bumping down the street causing trouble, if you can't find a way to stop them, they're kids, and say, what are you guys doing? What do you got? I don't. You know what, Kevin? Something's wrong. Something is wrong.
Tom, you may be 100% right about that, but do you not think these quotes, do you not think that I think we disproportionately stop whites too much and minorities too little is going to be a persistent campaign ad?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I think that's just a killer for him.
Well, I mean, here's the...
Especially, you know, we're kind of in woke world, and so, you know, you have to not only disavow it, but, you know, apologies don't work anymore either. So you don't get to say, I'm sorry. You know, everybody says, I demand apology. I demand apology. Fine. You get the apology. Does anybody drop it and say, okay, we're good then? No. So he's kind of, you know, he's kind of screwed here.
Well, you know,
I think the Democrats, they have a problem at the moment anyway, because if they nominate Bernie, they got a problem. If they don't nominate Bernie now, they have a problem, because the Bernie supporters are, you know, they've moved away from Warren. They're all, you know, all in on Bernie, and they all think he's getting screwed. They all think the Democratic Party is trying to screw him at every
turn.
If he doesn't get the nomination, a lot of them are going to sit it out.
Except if we have a president
on that one too.
If we have a president that has no morals, we're screwed. We've got one of those now. And if we get another,
sure we are.
Yeah, and if we got another guy who can't add, we're screwed too.
But I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the politics of it as I see it. You know, I'm wrong. I was the guy who said 4 years ago that Trump wouldn't so much as win a primary. So, you know, don't go bet based on what I say. But that's the way I'm seeing it. Is right now there's a problem because Bernie's not.
He's not going away.
I don't think he's going to win a general election.
I don't think he is.
And if he doesn't get the nomination, I think there's a lot of his voters that are going to say, well, they screwed us again.
Well, okay. I mean, I guess the Elizabeth Warren voters can feel the same way, too, and been opt out. But, you know, the fact is, you know, that's not whatever. I'm just saying, you know, Kevin,
are the Warren voters really feeling like the Democratic Party is going out of their way? You watch if Bloomberg gets the nomination, for example. You know, what's that story going to be? Well, they went and changed the rules to let him thrive so that they could screw Bernie out of his rightful nomination. That's going to be how the story is told by the Bernie supporters. And it's also going to be a lot of other supporters. It's going to be, you know, the people who were supporting, you know, not in large numbers, but Castro or Cory Booker or so on, who, you know, it did not benefit from the rules.
What rules are we talking about?
You know, the debate rules, how you get included in the debates. So, you know, now they're going to allow Bloomberg to buy his way into that after, you know, keeping some of the others off of the stage and ultimately having their campaigns fizzle, and now they're going to let Bloomberg in. You know, that's going to be a problem for them. It divides their party.
How does Bloomberg not get in when other two guys bailed out now? I don't mean
because they have their debate qualifications for the numbers of donors you have to have, and where you have to be in the polls. And he meets the polling requirement, but he doesn't meet the number of donors requirement.
What if you ran on your own money and you had no donors? You could never be in a debate.
Yeah.
Well, how stupid is that?
So they're going to change the rules. They're going to change the rules for the old white billionaire.
No, they're going to change the rules because it's an idiot.
That's not a problem for a lot of people in that party.
It's changing the rules from an idiotic rule.
Yeah.
But
I'm with you there.
You know, the interesting part is I feel different. We only have a couple minutes, Kevin, and Russell's here. But this part about the stop and frisk, this part about targeting people. You know what, Kevin? Unless you are the policeman, and I'm not saying we don't have policemen like this. That will say, okay, I'm going to let the white guy or the black guy go by, and I'm only going to pick on, like, the other guy. But the weird part is, I mean, I'll tell this quick story. If you go to Ohio, a few times I've been in Ohio, whenever you see people pulled over in a construction zone, it seems to me inevitably they're from Illinois. I don't think they're being targeted. I just think they're morons because the people in Illinois never slow down for a construction zone. The people in Ohio actually pay attention. Now, I have no
problem. You're asking for logic,
yeah.
And you're arguing with logic over an emotional argument.
But, I mean, we're talking the 95th Street.
And it's an emotional, yeah. It's a pervasive emotional argument.
But to me, it's just as wrong to stop four white guys, four black guys, and see a black guy go by at 90 miles an hour and say, I can't get another black guy to get a white guy. That to me is just as insane.
You're giving a logical argument to against an emotional argument.
But these should be logical. We're trying to have people live safely, and we're trying to do it in the most effective way possible. I think that's the goal. Not to insult one or the other, or to have somebody who's totally guilty telling you he shouldn't have been stopped because why was another guy stopped? That didn't work with my mother or yours.
I know.
But
I'm...
All right, Kevin, take care of yourself, buddy.
How the party regulars think.
Yeah, well, it's... Whoever the party regulars are, I don't know who they are these days. Who are these alligators?
they're irregular.
The spooze up at 11:50. Who are these alligators? Richard J. Daley, one of my heroes. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. He's Mr. Russell Rhodes. Mr. Matt Weber is on the board as usual. S&P futures up 11 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 41 and a quarter. Individual stocks moving. We got Apple up a dollar and a half. We got 3M up a buck. We got Boeing up another buck. IBM up 70 cents. Russell, what'd you think of, talk about a world in which either people are so friggin' clueless or something. What did you make of the, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, or if you listened in, the T-Mobile thing where two people wrote articles regarding the judge was about to rule in favor of the merger without any announcement coming out of the judge, and the stock had already moved like 10%, where people were front-running the judge's decision. Mm-hmm. How stupid is this judge? How much do they pay his clerk? What is going on here?
I mean, if you know what his calendar looks like, and you know this is the day he's going to rule, and you have some insight.
What do you mean? Define insight.
You're a subject matter expert. You've spent at least 10,000 hours of your life focusing on it, and you have a pretty good idea. If you're a lawyer that focuses on M&A, you probably have a really good idea of what the ruling's going to be. So
without hearing it from anybody.
Without hearing it from anybody, yeah. It's just like FDA drug approvals. If you're an MD and you understand the science and you know the date that the announcement's supposed to come out, you can make more money working for a hedge fund doing that than you can trying to fix people.
I know, but we don't same thing. You don't normally see the stock move the day before because everybody tells you it's approved.
Well, everybody's telling you that it's got. So you're thinking that.
Right, Russ Sorkin, I think I both wrote columns in the paper talking about the impending approval when the judge has yet to say boo.
And you know where they got that from?
I'm somewhere near the judge is what I'm
saying. No, I don't think they got it from the judge. I think they got it from a couple of their hedge fund contacts.
I
I know this for a fact. Not on that one, but I know that that does happen. Because I do, I spent about 20 years working
on the only way you could get it is from one of the people in them on the governmental side saying that they laid off not wanting it to happen or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, it's obviously a front run.
Somebody planted the story, bought some stock, and, you know, we should go look at the option activity quickly.
Oh, well, the stock activity is right, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's...
I'm going to go look at the option activity.
Well, there you go.
The people that, if anybody traded around it, like I just said, they won't hold it at the end of the quarter, so they won't even have to file that they owned it. I mean, regulators can go back and see if somebody traded it, but the way that they disclose their holdings only once a quarter.
I'm just saying, it seems odd to me that if I was the judge and I had just made up my mind, and I walk out the next morning and I find that everybody knew what I said, even if I didn't tell anybody, mm-hmm. I'd wonder how the hell they got it. Did somebody break into my office or what? That's just me. I know. I'm just saying.
Well, no, I don't think anybody broke in their office. I think somebody's just. I worked at places where we tried to trade these catalysts. And I would have a whiteboard, and I would have things listed. I'd have, you know, drug approvals that are on the horizon. I'd have all the different types of things, and I had some people that I'd speak to that understood the science better than I did, and we would load up, we'd back up the boat or back up the truck sometimes when we were really sure that when we felt like the odds were in favor of a big approval, and we'd do it a day or two before. Now, if they're funds that are paying attention to the T-Mobile Sprint thing, and there were people at CNBC that we spoke to every single day. Sometimes we would say silly things to see if they would repeat them on TV, which was really, I'm not going to throw any reporters under the bus, but some of them would fall for it a little bit more than others. Some of them would never fall for it. But yeah, I mean, I'll guarantee that's what happened. They did not get the story. Andrew Ross Sorkin, he knows better. He created the show Billions. He knows what you can do and can't do legally. He probably has some really good contacts that we're focusing in on the timing. You know, maybe people know that the judge goes on vacation, you know, next week and wanted to get this out of the way this week.
I think
it's just as likely. I think it's actually more likely in this case that somebody was just really paying very close attention to the progression of things and, you know, went ahead and fed that to the press.
I'm not talking about the date.
Yeah.
That part I get.
I'm talking
about everybody's convinced they know what the ruling is. How do you know that?
I'm reading the article while I'm talking. Look at how coordinated I am.
Yeah.
It says here that the judge back in January said if they could get some state regulatory things behind them, that was really the only issues they had to overcome. And apparently they did that. So, you know, the next step is this. So maybe people knew that.
Can you think of any reason why you would let this go through?
No, I wouldn't let it go through. But, I mean, I would not let it go through.
Well, if somebody were to buy...
Now we're going to have, you know, three.
Yep.
I guess once we hit a big three, we don't let anything else happen. You know? But
well, what's left to happen at that point?
I think it's kind of like I'm thinking of automakers.
Yeah.
Is what I'm really thinking.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you hit three. Tech wise, who do we got? Apple, Microsoft, and who else might fall within that space that we could say is the third?
Intel, maybe.
Yeah. Well, Intel's on the chip. It'd be Intel, the AMD, and then maybe Qualcomm. Something like that. But yeah, you always say, I think the government's okay as long as we get to, once we hit three, they stop approving things.
I think they're you know? Stone cold ignorant and all this stuff, to be honest with you.
I just wouldn't allow this one, but they did.
And, how soon do you think all
it gets more and more expensive to have these little phones around in our pockets, especially when you've got, you know, three other people in the house that you have to buy them for.
Well, it's stunning when you see families that obviously don't have any money at all, and all the kids have phones.
Yeah. Well, you get your. I don't. Do they still have Obama phones?
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
That was a...
Yeah, well, yeah. It's...
I mean, I think there actually is some sort of government program where you can get a really low-end phone, which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, I do, too.
I mean, if you're trying to get yourself back up on your feet, you need to have a phone number, you know?
I would agree.
At minimum, you don't necessarily have to have an address, but you have to have a way for people to get in contact with you and call you up and say, come work.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm okay with that one, but not the latest iPhones that everybody in my house has except for me.
I don't have one of those either. So, yeah. Hey, what?
You've got a flip phone, right?
I have one. I don't use it much anymore.
I've got a big brick phone in my office.
I think I'm going back to that.
Okay.
I want to get something that let's say like the largest phone you can get, or even a small tablet. Where you can actually...
You can talk on them? Yeah.
And what I would do is I'd put my main number... I'd use the flip phone for actually making calls. It's a way better phone than a phone, one of these things. So I'd use it for that. And
Use the phone for the phone.
Yeah, and the other stuff.
Smart device for...
The smart stuff.
Taking it for all your Instagram and Snapchat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I know how to do any of those things, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't do any of that stuff. Anyway.
All right.
We got Fed talking. Continuing to pour, we started to back off on the money just a little bit, being pouring into the system. I don't know if you noticed that. And now this week we put the pedal to the metal again.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese put so much money in, and although that affects our money supply as well.
I think it does too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Some of that money ends up over here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the extent that it does, then it's here. I just don't know. Just a continual pump up of asset prices and keeping interest rates down. And every time you do that, I mean, even people now aren't economists somewhat by trade like you, mm-hmm. are saying nothing is pushing the distribution of wealth toward the ends like what the Federal Reserve's doing.
No, they're propping us all up. All of us collectively, some of us more than others.
But I mean, you look at, Maddie knows this better than I do, but if you were to look at the price of we're talking 30-some million dollars for quarterbacks now. We're talking about that for,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm, and the average, here, actually what I wanted to talk to you about, which I'll get to, but I just read an article yesterday regarding, families' debt positions.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw these household debt jumps, When you continually jump back and forth in an article, I'm not saying people are doing it on purpose, between median and mean. I don't think ever in my lifetime, which average you're using is making the most difference, because I don't think I've ever seen a time where the average, where I'm getting to this is if you talk about people's average income,
mm-hmm.
and you were to include, say, stock income of last year and do an average, You got an economy that is going swimmingly.
Yeah,
but if you take median, the numbers are totally different.
It's not, it just depends on what angle the reporter's going for. Which number tells the better story? I've actually gotten that question recently from somebody at one of the big paper places. I'm trying not to say which one it was. But they were like, which one kind of proves this point better? And said, well, this number doesn't prove it at all. Okay, we'll use the other one.
Well, because here's what there's an article here by, how's this for a name? Jesse Pound.
Who is Jesse Pound?
Some guy wrote this article.
Oh. I thought he was the WWE video champion.
Yeah, he does sound like he's a wrestler or something. Yeah. Anyway, here's...
Undercard.
Title is Household Debt Jumps the Most in 12 Years, Federal Reserve Report Says. So according to this,
he's at CNBC,
that's an article by, it's a CNBC article on markets.
Okay.
And it says here that the last year, total household debt balances rose by $601 billion,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot. Total household debt balances surpassed $14 trillion for the first time.
Okay.
But now here, the level of household debt service as a percentage of disposable income is at an all-time low going back to 1980. How could all three of those things be true?
Well, the debt service, well, interest rates are a little bit lower.
Not on credit cards.
I know, but I'm just, I mean, but for, you know, my most recent car loan, we paid like 3.25%. So, yeah, and where'd you say 1980?
Yeah, I mean,
in the first car loan, I was actually talking about my first car that I bought with the Uber guy last night, because my first car was a Nissan Sentra, and that's what we were in. And in 85, it cost me $5,000, and I think my car payments were just after the down payment, my car payments were just a tad over $100. Now, the one car that we have a loan on, the payment's $750. As a percentage of, but if you know, if you're including mortgages, which have a lower interest rate, and you're including the car payments and things like that, which have a fixed interest rate, and then if you just say that the debt service is the, you know, minimum payments on your credit cards, it's very possible that as a percent of your income, especially if they're not asking you to make much of a minimum payment on your credit card, so that the interest keeps building up, I can see that I can see that as a distinct possibility.
I have a feeling that we're using average income on this personal income thing here, not median,
and then median debt service.
Yeah,
that would get the number you want.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
really, yeah.
But it's not telling you anything. So, no, but I could see that. I really just, you know, I just did the inflation interest rate thing at Loyola on Monday in class, where I show the 10-year rate at 14% back in the 80s and explain, you know, the relationship between inflation and interest rates. And then I showed them about where they were born and that it's done nothing that go down since, so it's all their fault. I can see, just because of that aspect of interest rates, you know, that, and if that's really how you're counting debt service, I can see it being a lower part of your income. But I'll bet you that we have more debt, and we do.
If you focus on the median person, that sees the inflation go up like last year and sees the healthcare go up last year, the family that was making, the median family was making 56 grand 2 years ago and now is making like 56.5. There's no way that their debt service has gone down with the debt numbers going up.
Well, not from year to year, but over a longer term period, yeah. I think you're losing it on the.
I think you can do whatever you want with these numbers if you're not.
Oh yeah, you
careful.
Can do that too. I'm not saying that it's reality. I'm just telling you how I think they got to the number.
You know what's even weird? We talked about your car payment when all that started. I don't know what year it was, but I was. I think I might have just been on the trading floor. I mean, I was still working at Pullman. I don't know, but there was a huge outrage when companies started to do that. In terms of zero interest and, you know, 2% interest for 2 years and that kind of thing. Because it's blatantly illegal. I think you know that.
Yeah.
Because what is supposed to happen, and I'm talking about out of the Stone Age here, but if General Motors should be in the car business, the fact that they have General Motors, what was it, General Motors Finance, GMAC?
GMAC, who is now Ally Financial, I think.
Yeah. The fact that they would give essentially a rebate to only one lender, so to get you that rate, is illegal. What it should be is there should be a number that's associated with it. We'll give you 0% interest at our place, or we'll give you a $4,000 check that you can take anywhere you want.
But when
it first started, they always had to do that. And over time, the Generation Xers, the Millennials, everybody, they just think now this is good business. Mm-hmm. And what's wrong with preferencing essentially your bank? But the idea that General Motors, the automaker, will only give a rebate, which is what it is, to their finance company, is absolutely against the Clayton Act. There's no way you can defend it. Because the interesting part is, you don't even know what you're paying. Because you are paying interest, right?
Yeah.
But the the rebate is essentially covering it. But in those days, when you get a car, when you actually go to your bank or your credit union or wherever to get this loan, if you were to take the $5,000, you might be able to walk into Lakeside Bank and say, or any credit union, and they may say, oh, we'll finance your car for X. By the way, we'll give you $500 back out of that $5,000 because we're not charging as much interest as GMAC. Because they're two totally competitive areas. And I know when I say this, other than you, Russell, does anybody even know what the God's name I'm talking about?
I don't think most people do.
Now, the question is why?
Well, lack of education for one thing. Lack of forced disclosure, I think, is the other one.
Is it so easy to just get the zero loan there and not actually
take
the...
Yeah, and I guess
I think it's just the easy part of it. It's the, you know, it's paying for your coffee with your credit card or with your smartphone, not caring if somebody knows you're in Dunkin' Donuts in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it must just all be for convenience.
I think that's just part of it. I think that there's this generational thing where they're just used to doing everything that way now.
Well, I know my stepfather
and
from that generation actually looked at the number, went to the credit union, and went to the bank and said, we're buying this car. And they said, your total financing is going to be $3,000. And the check in lieu of the zero interest was $3,500. He said, all right, I'll take the check.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right? Well, now there is no check. You either get zero interest from them, or there's no quid pro quo. There's no corresponding rebate if you went somewhere else. Correct?
Right.
Now, how is it? I mean, I don't see how that's legal, but it's legal if you get away with it, I guess.
It's legal as long as you it's only legal. It's illegal once you get caught. That's what I'm trying to
do. But I don't even think anybody would have the stones to try in. What are you talking about? I'm getting zero interest. It's a good day.
Yeah. And I guess in order for somebody to look into it, somebody's actually got to complain.
I'm shifting gears here. Page two, Paul Harvey. Is the coronavirus in the rearview mirror?
No.
China says back to work. Markets up there up 2 days in a row.
No.
We obviously were up 2 days in a row.
No.
You think so?
I don't think so. I don't think they've contained it
yet.
I think maybe they've, you know what? Maybe they have contained it. And I mean, have you seen the videos of them pulling people into hospitals just because they happen to be around somebody that had it? I mean, it's just awful. It looks like something. It really looks like something out of Hunger Games.
Let me make it a two-step question.
Yeah.
Because I know you travel in different groups than I do. First of all, we can't contain the common cold. We can't contain, I'll use the term, regular flu. But so what? It doesn't knock off economies. It doesn't, you know, the flu is aggravating and so is the common cold, as everybody knows. But it's something we just have to deal with as humans. Is this thing, I'll say at least in this country, in the Western world, the lack of deaths toward it, is it to the point now where some people are saying, I don't even care if I get it, I'm not going to croak?
I mean, a possibility. Although I still see some people wearing masks around every once in a while.
Well, I'd still rather not get it, obviously.
Yeah, which the masks don't really help at all. But no, I don't. I mean, I think what has happened is it appears that anybody that they think has even a small chance of getting it, they've put them in the same room. And I think that's their version of containing this thing. Is, you know, if your husband has it and he's over at the hospital, well, damn it, and you're not showing any symptoms, well, that doesn't matter. We're going to come get you, and you're going to lay in the bed next to your husband until, you know, you either have been, you know, either you get it and run through it, or you get it and you die from it. But that's why I think they think they've contained it, because it appears that they have
They've got rows and rows of beds in these makeshift hospitals.
And they've rounded, and they are just rounding people up that might have it. And if they think they got everybody that might have it and keep them out of the general population, well, back to work with everybody.
Yeah.
But how many people does it take to slip through that little net, big net, in order to, you know, make it, in order to have another round with this thing? And that's what I think is going to happen.
Those pictures of those
I think we're going to have another round of this.
You want to reach for the airline, stick this bag. Mm-hmm. Take the pictures of those places with the beds all lined up next to each other.
Uh-huh.
And look at some pictures from 1918. It's the exact same
thing. Oh, the same thing with the...
Same thing, all the beds lined up in like Quonset huts and Butler buildings. Or whatever.
No, I don't think... I think that I think they believe that they've got it under control, but I think a second round is probably coming, especially if they're telling everybody it's all clear when it's not.
Well, my read right now, which could be totally wrong, mm-hmm. is that a lot of people think that if it just got out here in the general population, it would essentially be a bad winter's flu, not much worse. But they're very concerned for some reason with these coronaviruses that they continue to mutate.
Yeah, they stay ahead of the vaccine.
They don't want this thing. That's what happened in 1918.
Yeah,
it went through and came back.
Yeah,
came back as a mutated version.
I personally think there's going to be a there's going to be a second round of this.
Well, boy, I hope not.
But the other thing is, unfortunately, I don't think it seems like they don't want to acknowledge when their problems as quickly as they possibly should.
Well,
I mean, I was the doctor that first sounded a warning about this. He's passed away now. But
do you think he passed away from the disease, or he had help?
No, he passed away from the disease.
He didn't have a helping.
But
they yanked him.
They yanked him into the police station, and he basically they have some statement where if you're spreading their version of fake news, if you're spreading information that they consider inaccurate and possibly inciting everybody else, getting everybody all fired up, which the government really doesn't want to happen because there's so many people there. He basically had to sign. It's a really funny statement, but it says, I acknowledge that I have spread information. I will not do this anymore. And so on about what they've done, and they acknowledge. I acknowledge this, and then the next thing is, now you promise to calm down, think about what you've done, and not continue that activity ever again. Do you agree to do that?
Yeah, I told you.
And he signed. I mean, I saw. And I don't know if it's real or not, but I saw what was supposedly a translated version of that. And
well, if you tell them the disease is dangerous and you die from it, is that proof?
Yeah, I think that's definitely proof. Because, he was working in a healthcare facility where people were showing up with it. I equate it. You've been in this business long enough. And sometimes people will make a trading error. And instead, a lot of the big financial disasters we've had are people taking on too much risk, making an error, and then not acknowledging it quick enough. Yeah, and I think there's a human nature part of that. You don't want to go to your boss.
I'll try and fix it.
And say, I hit a couple. I meant to hit the decimal, and instead I just hit a couple extra zeros, and I'm long 10,000 whatever when I'm only supposed to be long 100. And the second you do that, you tell your boss. That's what I tell all the young people, because it's not going to get any better. Even if you trade out of it, there's going to be a WTF meeting afterwards. But I think there's that same. I think it's even to a more extreme. I think there's that same sort of mentality in China that you do not deliver bad news. Just don't. And if you do, and you're wrong. You have to go home, calm down, and think about what you've done.
Well, when's the last time you were on a board? You don't get to say anything.
No.
You think the Fed is going to go out and say anything about these guys? Can't all be happy with what they're doing?
Oh, they're not. But they have to, in a very walking on eggshell way, acknowledge
what
that.
What if we get some rogue at the Bureau of Labor Statistics that comes out Thursday and says CPI is like up 3% or something?
Or changes the formula without telling anybody.
Yeah. What are we going to do about that?
I wouldn't be shocked, and you want to know why I wouldn't be shocked? I think none of the bureaucrats in D.C. want Trump to be reelected, so I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we start seeing some bad economic numbers this summer.
Some truth? S&P futures up 13.25%. NASDAQ futures up 46%. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox.
The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 1375. NASDAQ Futures up 49 as we're making another shot at moving up here. Dow up 138. We do seem to be doing this few days in a row here. We'll see when that I thought we might turn down yesterday. We turned down 100 points at one point.
That's, and the NASDAQ, that's your buying opportunity.
Well, it was. NASDAQ was up 65, and at one point was down 40 and bounced back to be above zero on the close.
Did you buy the dip?
I did not. Although we did some rolls, which is the same thing. So yeah, it was an okay day.
So I'd say you did.
And we did a couple of earnings spreads, which came out okay. So we're busy. DAX up 112.8%, FTSE up 28.4%, CAC around up 32.5%. For people that are just investing their money, it's hard to, you can't really do much of that, Russell. I mean, you try to catch a little bit of it, but.
Oh, I know.
You just kind of watch and are sort of amazed at the movement you get. Yeah. Nikkei up 175.4%, Shanghai up 25.8%, Hang Seng up 239.8%. I'm going to say, Russell, even though you and maybe I do not think this thing is in the rearview mirror just yet, China's starting to act like it. Wanting people back to work. They want a lot of people quarantined, but the rest, they're trying to make business as usual, or at least making an effort.
You got to generate profits if you're in debt.
Oh, yeah. DAX up 112.8%, FTSE up 28.4%, CAC around up 32.5%. Bonds, the interest rates are sneaking up again a little bit because they were down huge with this virus thing. 10-year yield was up to what, 189?
Up to.
And then it got down to what, 148, now we're back to 162, so we're creeping.
We're right in the middle of the recent range.
Yep. A Bund minus 0.37, Japan minus 0.04, oil up a dollar, but still 5101 going nowhere. And the story about Russia and OPEC getting together to cut supply, well, that ended up being what? A fart in a hurricane, right? That was one story for one day. And it totally disappeared. So I wouldn't be too anxious if there's oil running up anytime soon, would you, Russell? I
mean, no.
Natural gas, 183. RBOB, 155. Gold, down 79 cents. Still hanging in this 1569, 1575 range, which is high to hang. So like David said, it's either going to go 1600, in which case you want to buy it at 1550. You might want to... it's going to break one way or the other. I don't know which one.
It's stair-stepping higher.
Yes. Copper, 260 up 2 cents. First positive move there in a while. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. By the way, I have a story for you. Before you made it down this morning, the average engaged person, which you are, on Valentine's Day, they're not talking about the year before you're engaged. We're, you know...
Now.
Right now, after you're engaged, that the average male spends... 220 and the average female 120. The implication being the year before you're engaged, the lady pays a much higher percentage of that total. But once you're engaged, they fall off and it's all you.
Really?
Just saying. These are just statistics.
Yeah, I will say the average total spend for Valentine's Day for us is down because we're spending so much money on the wedding.
Oh, well, that'll do it, yeah.
So the Valentine's Day has no importance, really.
I've got some construction paper if you want to make a card later on.
Well, there's some point.
We're going to dinner, and that'll be great, and that's it.
Well, I even got Audrey's friends, her gang of, her union, her female union around her.
Her gaggle.
Oh, yeah. It's a total gaggle. they've all agreed that if I drive out there on Saturday and stop in the Fannie Mae's the day before or the day after, where everything's half price,
oh, yeah,
and double up on the candy, they're better off than me buying it the day before.
Well, that's true only if, though, you're coming on Saturday and not Friday. If you're coming on Friday empty-handed, that's not going to go over well. But the fact that you're coming in on Saturday, then yes, of course, get the half price and double up.
Well, you know who did this for almost the entire, well, not the entire trading floor, but for a lot of people? Dr. J would do that with his old girlfriend before the wife. And there was what's the real high-end chocolate place? Higher than Fannie Mae's. The place is,
I wouldn't know.
Dunstall's?
No, they were down here in LaSalle. I'll think of it. But he used to go the day after, mm-hmm, and everybody laughed at him. 2 years later, he sent in 2 clerks to coming back with like 50 pounds of candy. Everybody in the pit was doing the same thing.
Was he reselling it for 10% higher?
No, just if everybody, you know, yeah, everybody gave the clerk a couple bucks for going for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Matty.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're actually off to a pretty good start here this morning.
Godiva chocolates.
There was an earlier crash on the outbound Kennedy Chief just before Montrose. That apparently is clear. A little bit of resulting congestion from that, but not too bad. About 36 minutes from downtown out to O'Hare on the outbound Kennedy, which is actually a little bit better than normal, especially considering there was an earlier crash. No issues on the inbound side. Normal traffic volumes there. Eisenhower and Stevenson, traffic starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report. Southside expressways have looked good all morning. We did have an earlier crash on the Veterans Memorial I-355 northbound just before Maple Avenue. But that's clear. Some congestion from that, but the accident itself has been moved off. Only other issue in the area is in the northern suburbs. Rand Road at Old Rand Road, US 12, there is an accident. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine early, and then the clouds roll in this afternoon, and we'll get some snow beginning tonight and into tomorrow, expecting 3 to 6 inches of accumulation. And then right following that snowstorm, the temperatures will drop. So we'll be in the low 20s for a high tomorrow, and then just the teens for the high on Friday before we warm back up into the 30s over the weekend. So the next couple of days, not ideal. Today, we'll go up to a high of 37 before the snow moves in this evening. Right now, it is sunny and 28 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 64 today. Right now, it's clear and 43. In sports, not a great night for our teams. Blackhawks had a couple of leads up in Edmonton and ended up blowing them and falling the Oilers 5-3. The Coyotes lost to the Maple Leafs in Toronto 3-2. NBA basketball, Bulls were blown out at Washington 126-114. And in college hoops, a couple of tough losses. Notre Dame fell in overtime by one to Virginia, 50-49. Illinois rallied back from 23 down at home to Michigan State, took the lead, and then lost it on a dunk with 5 seconds left, losing to Michigan State by one, 70-69. Not only that, their best player, Io Dosumu, went down with an apparent knee injury in the final seconds. We'll learn more today, but it didn't look good.
That would seriously suck if that poor kid's hurt.
Yeah, that would not be good. It was such a fluke thing, too. He was driving down the floor to take a last-second shot, and then he tried to stop, and his feet gave out. But as he was sliding and losing the ball, one of his feet got stuck underneath him. And so it just bent awkwardly at the knee and did not look good. And he got helped off the court. I haven't heard anything yet as far as the significance, but we'll find out later today.
Yeah. Russell, you tweeted out a...
I did, and we've got to get you on the Twitter.
Well, Manny is.
He monitors the Twitter, but he doesn't tweet. Twitter. Yeah, he'll check in on it every once in a while.
Yeah, no, it's Lisa Abramowitz from Bloomberg, who I think is really, really smart.
Who is her dad? Because we
is she have a father that's famous or something?
I'm saying I know that name from somewhere. Okay. I don't know if it's a big-time trader or sports guy or something, but that name rings a bell.
I've just always been a big fan of her. She interviewed me on the radio once, and
That's all it takes.
Are
you fans of ours now?
Because I've always been a fan of yours. Been a fan of yours long before you ever allowed me to come in here.
Fair enough.
I used to go running every morning and listen to you guys on 670.
In your
years
sweater.
Ago,
you were running in a cardigan sweater.
I was running in a cardigan sweater. Oh. I've actually knocked out a Chicago Marathon, believe it or not.
Good for you. You're nowhere near the 100 like Brandon.
No. God, no. So she, but she tweeted out a chart of, the Greek 10-year yield, which is now hovering around 1%, even though, they have gotten their fiscal house in a little bit of order. But even though they,
don't tell me they have a surplus.
No. They've gotten it a little bit more in order. So, but the
we're not as broke as we used to be,
right? You know, well, they're not paying out as much as they used to, and so, but it's kind of shocking if they have that they're still not by far not one of the strongest economies over there. They still the rating agencies, which what do the rating agencies actually tell us that's accurate? The market tells us what's up.
They'll tell you relative strength because they look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
Markets don't.
No. Well, they'll tell you relative, but the markets will tell you, in reality what people are willing to, how much risk they're willing to take on. My assumption behind this one is that the Greek bonds have some sort of guarantee from the ECB, and it's almost like buying a junk bond. And
I'm going to say it's a guarantee that people and Freddie and Fannie thought they had.
Well, I'm just telling you why I think that why the number is why it's a 1%. I think there's a guarantee there, and it's much like buying a junk bond and that maybe gives you 10%, and then at the same time buying some sort of credit default insurance that you pay 9% for. So you end up earning 1% because you, but you just don't have to do the insurance part there. I just think it's their association with the ECB. I think the higher yields are they going to throw them out? Of the euro, they're not going to throw them out of the euro.
Personal question.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who knows the numbers now better than me, because you're younger and you're doing more of it. How the hell? Just because aren't you stunned at the lack of, shall we say, rigorousness at which the markets are actually judging this stuff? I mean, it becomes down to relative value, but at some point, the relative value doesn't work. I mean, so we're saying, would I rather get 1% in Greece if I think that somehow there's an implied guarantee, right? And I know I'm making a stretch with that.
Instead of 0.2 in Germany?
No, instead of paying in Germany.
I was trying to make it simple. But absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's that really, if you're not thinking about the junk status of Greek debt and you're just looking at it relative to other you know, other debt that's being put out by the countries that are in the European Union, you know, you're doing a little bit better. And people are tripping over themselves to find yield somewhere. And if right. they're, you know, it, and, you know, if they're happy with 1%, they're going to buy those bonds. But it's, it, you know, and it's just been trending lower. But it still is yielding more than all of their neighbors, I think. So, well, but I think that's what, you know, she tweeted that and you know, the chart, if you just think of it like, oh my God, how do I go short those things? You know, you have to start thinking about the mechanics behind it. And my assumption is the mechanics behind it is there is a nice guarantee from the ECB on those bonds, and there's a little bit more belief in the strength of the ECB.
I'm going to say, I'll run this one by you, that if it wasn't the two-step transaction, mm-hmm. which is usually, if you're involved in a financial two-step transaction, it's usually a loser. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't the two-step, if you didn't have central banks making up money and buying these bonds at a price that drives the price negative, do you think that the government themselves would ever be able to go out to their population and float a negative interest bond? I'm going to say no.
No. No, they absolutely would not be able to.
So, I mean, at some point, you have to say to yourself, I mean, me being in the business, I always ask myself, okay, people are paying me to invest their money, okay? Because mm-hmm. they think I'm supposed to know what I'm doing, which I think...
You do.
I try the best I can to do it.
No, I...
Now, the thought of mm-hmm. of me taking $10 million from Papa Russell, your grandfather, I hope he's probably not alive, but I hope he is, and for me to take that money, charge him some sort of a fee, even if it's a small fee, and put it in a negative interest rate thing for 20 years, I think somebody come after me with a machete.
Yeah.
As well they should. So how does it, if it's such an incredibly stupid transaction on an individual level, yeah. how can, I mean when you start talking about, I will buy a Greek bond at 1% mm-hmm. because the German bond is a minus 3% the way the European Central Bank has bid them up. No, I honestly believe, Russell, in this business, mm-hmm. since I've started, the concept of relative value has cost people more money than, okay,
oh, yeah.
than anything else. Let's
and
see.
Smart yeah, people. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Russell's 57 Chevy just went for 50 grand, so my 56 must be worth, I should pay 55 for a 56. No.
You mean the one on blocks in
yeah,
my front yard?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. not yeah. necessarily. I mean, this is an amazing, but it shows you how everything gets worked its way down. And the junk bonds, I mean, and you know this because you and I studied this years ago because it was such a new phenomenon. Is when, I forget the guy's name all the time, the guy with the bad
Milken.
Yeah, the guy with the bad hairpiece and went to jail.
Mike Milken. They took it away from him.
In jail, yeah, it's horrible.
If they had taken Epstein's away from him, he'd still be alive.
Right, but if... God.
Sorry. I know you were on a roll and I screwed you up
if
there.
You,
sorry.
If what he did is he said, okay, if I can get 10% and not ready for prime time bonds, meaning not investment rated, hence the word junk, and I can mm-hmm. put people in a package where there's 20 of these things, one or two of them can actually go out.
And you're still what? Okay.
And you're still okay.
Yeah.
But you can't make that claim at 4%. Even
right.
if the 4%, even, like in other words, the risk-free rate at that time was, say, 3.5%. So, okay, if I get 11 or 10.5%
yeah,
for the
you're
time,
getting double digits for those things.
Yeah. But you're getting three times as much. Not just three times as much. Here's where the problem comes in my mind, the math part that I, every week I ask you this, is when things get to these extreme ends, the percentages don't work. Mm-hmm. It's not like just because they're three times, they're 8 points higher in the return. Mm-hmm. So one or two of the 20 can actually go belly up,
and
you're still
going
to do better than the 3.5. But when you get down to two, the junk bonds are 4, and the regular stuff is 1. Now all of a sudden the 2 going under doesn't cover you.
The textbook that I use for corporate finance updated last year because, you know, they had to change some numbers around, and they had a sample table of you know, AAA down to, you know, C or whatever the lowest S&P rating is. And triple B, which is kind of the over-under, it had a three handle on it for the for the yield. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I'll be using this in 3 years. And the same kid that right now is asking me, well, you know, can you really get 6, 7, 8% when I'm using those examples because you want to show that numbers change? You know, the same kid's going to be asking, oh, there's nowhere in the world that you only get 3%.
But if you look at the models, which you teach these kids all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what you say. I'm going to have to come and wing a tomato at you or something.
Oh, my God. I'd be so intimidated.
I don't know what you'd say if you say, all right, if a 10-year treasury is over there is paying minus 0.4%. I mean, in other words, you're losing on a deal. And I have a 8-flat in Frankfurt that has always been, it's next to a hospital, there's always been a nurse or a doctor in every apartment. I've returned 100,000 euros every year for the last 30, and it's only going up. If you look at just the model or the formula, that building is worth, you can't put a number on it. It's worth infinite.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, nobody's going to pay infinite. Why isn't the thing worth 30 billion euros?
I don't know.
Because you're still doing better than the -0.4%, or 50 billion, or 100 billion. There's no number you can put on it that if it has positive yield, that it's not worth more than the government's -0.4. Yet at some point, somebody sane is going to go, I can't pay 500 billion euros for that place with Russell's dad's dough. I
mean,
it's a little. So at the edges, we don't even know what we're talking about, I'm thinking, in terms of these numbers. But how do you say that in class? Here's the model, but oh, by the way, it's worth nothing today. Right?
I tell them how it was historically. I really do.
And then what do they say about, what about like today, Dad? Because you're their dad.
Now it's different, but it will go back to the way it used to be. It always does. You know?
Would you have thought it was going to go this long this way?
No. Absolutely not. God, no.
Yeah, it's hey, maybe should we talk a little, just a smidge about what's going to go on tomorrow on the show?
What's happening tomorrow?
Maddie, how far should I go with this? You're my producer and my consigliere. Where are you? He's not even there.
He's not. What's going on the show tomorrow? You tell me.
As you know, on Tuesday, we have the people from Luckbox Magazine in.
Oh, yeah.
And they put out a spectacular product. If you go online to Stocks and Jacks, you can download it for free. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you want to buy one or two of them because the covers are spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been working on this China issue for a long time. And they've got all these articles regarding, you know, who you got to pay. I haven't read it. I got it last week, but it's usually Jeff gives me one, and I didn't get it. And I said, you know, hey, where the hell's my magazine? And not in that tone, but it turns out they have like 4 articles that are talking about doing business over there that ended up being, you know, reasonably, I'll say, truthful regarding the government. Because I don't think those guys, Jeff's guys, do a hell of a job. But there is an article in there that's buried somehow about some lady entrepreneur, and this is all I know because Jeff's going to come on tomorrow. He says he is with Lou, and talk about it. Evidently, she's in the magazine.
Yeah.
And let's say somebody got wind of it from over there. They're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
So the Luckbox magazines have been pulled from all the shelves. Because of essentially her concerns about her family in China.
They didn't like that at all, huh?
And I'm saying...
It's amazing.
Jeff, I mean, I don't want to say too much, because Jeff's going to come on tomorrow, and he's going to say what he wants to say. But I thought it might be really smart to have him on with Lou, so I don't put my foot in my mouth, because Lou's the attorney. I'll let him kind of handle the interview more than me.
Mm-hmm.
I might even actually try and shut up for once. That's going to be tough. Muscle.
You'll do it.
But
you'll do it.
I want to get the story out as much as Jeff's willing to say, and I have a feeling that Lou won't let him go too far where he shouldn't go, even though it's all true, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stunned. I mean, I shouldn't be stunned. But when it hits home like that, you know, and you got everybody saying all they care about is spending a dime over there, and you've got, you know, some people here in government saying how great these people are. I mean, it's not a good situation.
Right.
And you know, people are afraid for themselves and their families and so forth over there.
Oh, yeah. No, and they're hauling people off.
Yeah.
Because they lived in the same, you know, they lived on the same floor as somebody that died of this thing.
Well, somebody.
It's just, yeah. it's.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking the treatment of the Muslims, evidently.
Yeah, no, I'd forgotten what was on TV, but I was kind of reading a few things about China, and I watched a video of them, you know, four guys in hazmat suits carrying somebody who's kicking and screaming and throwing them in the back of an ambulance or a paddy wagon or whatever. And a commercial for Hunger Games came on at the same time. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. We watch a movie like Hunger Games and we're like, okay, that's, you know, fiction and whatever. You know, that's never going to be reality. That's just, you know, a direction that the world would never take. Well, hell, there's a fifth of the world's population living in a place like that.
Well, yeah.
And beyond, you know, all we really ever see and all they ever really want us to see are these really huge cities where a lot's going on. Man, there are 700-800 million people living, you know, in just awful conditions and getting $15, $20, $25 a day to assemble a lot of the junk that we buy over here.
Yeah.
And I think the government likes it that way. I found out, I was shocked to find out that you actually do have to pay some money to go to elementary school in a bunch of places in China.
So
people don't send all their kids.
You gotta have people under your thumb if you're gonna be a dictator, right?
I think they're intentionally keeping their, we'll see, I'll never be invited to teach over there again now, but it almost feels like they're intentionally keeping over half their population at a certain proletariat level so that they have worker bees to continue to make stuff.
Well, did you ever read, I have it for you if you want, the autobiography of George Marshall, Soldier and Statesman?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, most people know his role in World War One and World War Two here, and the tremendous amount that he did, Manny's going to tweet out what time Jeff's going to call in tomorrow, I think, Manny, when you get there all straightened out, right? We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
I don't want to say too much because we'll see what Jeff feels like he wants to say tomorrow. Anyway, but and we also, we know of the Marshall Plan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In between there, talk about people who used to serve their country. He was able to retire finally from his army, gets in his car, drives home. Now, of course, you know, there wasn't parades and all that stuff like today. I mean, he was just a guy, even though he had done incredible work. When he pulled up, first thing he gets to the house, the phone rings. Guess who's on the phone? Harry Truman.
Well, that was nice.
Mr. President, I just walked in. Fine, I got you as quick as I could. Need you to go to China and negotiate a peace between Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong. And he actually went over there. The most fascinating parts of this book, he might have spent 18 months maybe. My memory's foggy. Took his wife back and forth, both sides. The inhumanity that either side would show toward the other people's followers, and even really didn't care if they were their own, it's something on a level that we don't even know what the hell's. Finally, he was there a year and a half or something. He told Truman, he goes, you know what? I'm not making any headway. One of them was worse than the other. There's just nothing we can do, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And came home. And then he went on to do the stuff in Europe where he was, you know, amazingly, the only time he was ever that frustrated in his life where he couldn't get anywhere was dealing with those two jamokes. You know, and I don't think much has changed in terms of, you know, care for your population. I mean, you want the place moving forward, I'm sure, and I'm sure they want the economy to be strong and military to be strong, but I don't think they care that much about individual person like we do here.
Oh, God, no. They think of them as a collective entity.
And that's, boy, I, you know.
That's how they think of the people in, they think of it as one giant collective entity.
What a wonder they want to come here. I mean, anyway. Tomorrow, tune in, please, for that. And, Maddie will tweet out what time. SP Futures up 14, 15, NASDAQ Futures up 51. Thank you, Russell. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708 949-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.